The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
From New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. I am broadcasting live from our studio in New York City, but not video streaming because of renovations on our studio. Today, in a newsmaker shorter segment at the last part of our program, we're going to talk about new methods called the Buteyko method. It's a Russian scientific method of helping people with asthma. And Dr. Thomas Fredrickson, a trained clinical psychologist, will be helping guide people who have breathing problems with that. In our issue segment of the program, which I'll be sharing two points of view, one from Professor Paul Craig Roberts, the other from John Nichols of The Nation magazine, and then asking you to call in and share your point of view. This is on Obama Raises American Hypocrisy to a Higher Level from Paul Craig Roberts, and Obama Tries Without Success to Explain an Undeclared War by John Nichols. Again, after this issue segment, please call in and I'll give you the number, not until, and you'll share that. From our environmental segment today, I'll be giving you even more information on unsafe at any exposure. I've taken the time to review all of our scientific literature in our massive archives here, over 23,000 programs and interviews over the years, and all of the leading experts have said, and we have reconfirmed, no amount of radiation is safe. So we'll be talking about Ira Heflund from Common Dreams, Unsafe at Any Exposure, quote, there is no safe level of radiation. Then radiation in U.S. rainwater from Japan now is being measured, but they're telling us not to worry. And then from the Right Livelihood Laureates, this is the alternative Nobel Prize, and they have all these 168 scientists that you've never heard of, haven't seen, who all agree that we should completely deconstruct all nuclear facilities in the world. And why is it that these voices, major spokespersons, are not given a forum? So, for example, we have David Krieger, member of the World Future Council and co-founder and president of the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation, who has points of view on this. And then we have Dr. Ida Kuglina, member of the Union of Soldiers Mothers Committee of Russian Coordination Council and the Right Livelihood Laureate. And you have none of these people. So they've controlled the debate, trying to get us to have more, not less. So we will take this on. Let's begin always with the latest on health and nutrition. And as always, the information comes from mainstream science and peer-reviewed literature. Why do I emphasize that? Because historically, any information coming from a dissident point of view, and I am a dissident and an activist, a social activist, and have been my entire life, immediately just being a dissident, you are put into another category of credibility, one that is not considered credible by mainstream. And yet mainstream rarely is able to find objective criticism of itself. So therefore, by using only mainstream science to show how significant the alternative and progressive point of view actually is, then we have to ask, well, if we can find this information, why isn't it being broadcast? For example, University of Pittsburgh published in the peer-reviewed journal Brain Behavior and Immunity. Anger causes inflammatory disease. Let me quote this from the study. Those who become angry or anxious easily are more prone to inflammatory illnesses like cardiovascular disease than others. Quote, this could help explain why some people with high levels of stress experience chronic health problems. That's according to Dr. Judith Carroll from the University of Pittsburgh. Now, quote, most people show increases in heart rate and blood pressure when they complete a stressful task. And specifically in our blood, there's a marker. It's called an interleukin 6. It's a pro-inflammatory marker. You can't see it. You can't feel it. But when that increases, then you're going to be more susceptible to bacterial and viral infections. Quote from the study, individuals who become angry or anxious when confronting relatively minor challenges in their lives are prone to increases in inflammation. That's according to Professor of Psychology and Nursing at University of Pittsburgh. Over time, this may render these emotionally reactive individuals more vulnerable to diseases. Now, let's step back a moment. Let's go back 15 years approximately. I was asked by a member of our running and walking club, a woman who said she has a sister who is suffering from multiple candida and conditions, and could I see her? I said, sure. So the woman comes in with her sister. They're both in their mid-30s. I think they're a year or two apart. And the one is very relaxed. The other is very unrelaxed, very stressed. Professional business suit and strong, dynamic personality, and hands me a list of all the foods that she cannot eat. And I look at the foods, and there are 96 foods that her doctors, plural, six separate physicians she has seen, including a few holistic environmental experts, said that if she had these, it triggers an IgG and IGF-mediated response, meaning her blood becomes reactive. She starts creating antibodies, and she becomes, in effect, she starts to fight her own immune system. Hence, she can't eat these. I'm looking at these foods. Historically, these foods should not have been allergenic. So when she asked me which things I would suggest, I said, it's not your diet that I would start the process with. She says, no, I came here because I thought I was going to get a diet. I said, no. I said, when I sit with people, the first thing I do is I try to give them the benefit of some intuitive energy of what I see could help them. And I don't believe your issue, from my perspective, is your diet. I believe that the immune response is directly related to your emotions. Have you taken the time? And with that, she didn't even let me stop the sentence. My emotions are fine. I'm a lawyer on Wall Street. I make $500,000 a year. I'm a Harvard graduate. I don't need to be lectured. And I said, I'm not lecturing you. You came for my advice. I'm merely trying to give you a point of view. If you've been to six physicians, if you have gone from not being able to eat from a few foods to almost 100 foods, and you only have four foods left you should eat, and you've taken all these supplements, then from my perspective, clearly just giving you another diet, more supplements will not work. With that, she got up and walked out of the room. And about a week later, her sister said, I'm sorry that my sister reacted that way. And I said, I don't imagine that that is anything out of ordinary for her. And she says, no, that's the way she's always been. I said, a few questions for you. Is she the sister that had to compete for your father's affection? Yes. Were you the one that seemed to have all the friends and be light and loose and easy to get along with, and she was the perfectionist? Yes. Let me guess, she was a 4-point student in college and has never had a relationship that that was to her liking. There was never a guy that could be her equal. There was always a put down, always what's wrong with this person? Yeah. I said, so it's not a diet that's going to help her. It's her level of anxiety, her energy, her anger, her inner rage. She's seeing the world from a perspective. It's never going to be what the world will be. And if you can't change the environment and the people in it, then you're just going to be angry with them, never being able to meet your expectations. And when you do that, your whole biochemistry is going to take a spin. So for your sister to get the help she really needs behavior modification. Then you'll see that all these other things clear up. 6 months go by. Finally, one evening, the two of them return. Almost a similar attitude, but she says it's gotten worse. Now she's sick half the time. She's too weak frequently to go to work. She's got brain fog. And she says, what would I suggest? I said, something that you may not appreciate, but just play along with it. Okay. I didn't tell her what we were going to do. She had on this business suit. I'm sure a very expensive designer suit. And we went downtown to the Bowery. We went down to Houston and Bowery. And then I found the place where I went in and got a bunch of quarters. I gave the guy $30 and I asked him, could I have $30 for the quarter? He gave me three rolls of quarters. Then we went outside and I got a bunch of rags. And when cars would pull up, I'd go out and start wiping down the people's windows. True story, I'd wipe down people's window and then they'd come over and I'd hand them a quarter. That kind of made it all strange because normally someone wipes down your window, you get a quarter. You don't. You give someone a quarter, you don't get a quarter. And it was funny because one of the people, when I just wiped down this person's window, and then they opened the window and I handed them 50 cents, the woman says, that looks like Gary Noll. The guy says, sure, Gary Noll's cleaning windows and giving out quarters on the Bowery. Yes, it was. And the whole idea was I wanted to get this woman to do something so out of character, just fun, crazy, stupid. And she was just, first she was ranting, cursing, thinking this was, I belong in a psychiatric institution. Maybe I do. But in that night, I was having fun. Well, finally she got into it. And then she started to speak with the other people who were hanging out in the Bowery. And I said, just remember, before you judge these poor people here, none of them were born here, but they all chose to end up here. Listen to their stories of woe. And she did. We found that there was a former mayor of a small town that ended up there. We found that there was a school teacher ended up there. And at the end of the evening, she understood something. She actually enjoyed herself. And the next day, her sister called and said, that was the most unexpected situation she's ever experienced in her life, but let her see that there was a reality outside of the reality that she needed to control every day and control the perceptions and control the conversation. And I said, now, take your sister out to a ball game. Take her out to a dance at the Roseland. Take her out to a disco. Take her to different places. Let her go see a movie she'd never see. If she doesn't like Westerns, take her to Western. Get her out of the myth of her story. And she did. 2 months later, back in. No allergies. Completely healthy. No candida. No diet. That's the power of anger in causing illness. That's the power of stress. That's the power of being caught up to where you cannot control the events in your life, so your body becomes the battleground. So when I suggest to people, and every single person I've ever counseled, first let's start with what you can change, including your perception, and then see how that manifests in what you thought you couldn't change, the outcome of disease. So when people ask, how am I able to be so successful helping people who otherwise have terminal illnesses? It never starts with a diet. It never starts, oh, take these vitamins. It always starts with attitude. Always. And I suggest that people in this audience think well. Your body's white blood cells protects us from infection, foreign substances like bacteria and viruses. You get yourself emotionally bent out of shape. You get too serious. You get too dogmatic. You get too pragmatic. You get too intense and wound up, you get too self-righteous. You've just allowed the viruses and bacteria in our body to take advantage. Fear, insecurity, loathing, violence, vengeance. And remember, every time you think a negative thought, every time you project a negative energy towards another person, you've just stabbed yourself in the heart. And you thought the dagger was pointed at someone else? No. You stab yourself first. So let's deal with anger. I'll deal with that in greater depth next week with Dr. Grayson and Dr. Shoshona. Next up, for those of you who thought it didn't matter if you stayed up late at night, on the cell phone, on the computer, twittering, it does. University of Berkeley and Harvard Medical School studied the brains of healthy young adults and found their pleasure circuitry got a big boost after a missed night's sleep. But that same neural pathway that stimulates feelings of euphoria and reward and motivation after a sleepless night also increases risky behavior. Quote, when functioning correctly, the brain finds the sweet spot on the mood spectrum, but the sleep-deprived brain will swing into both extremes, neither of which is optimum for making wise decisions. That's Professor of Psychology and Neuroscience, lead author. The findings underscore the need for people in high-stakes professions and circumstances not to shortchange themselves on sleep, because when you deprive yourself of sleep, you may feel more positive, just like a person on methamphetamine or cocaine or on marijuana. But according to the Journal of Neuroscience, that sleepless night can result in short-term euphoria, long-term poor judgment, and addictive behavior, which compounds the poor judgment, which means you're going to take inappropriate risks, stupid risks, and you're going to end up causing yourself and other people problems. So just keep that in mind, because otherwise people only look at the benefits of the short-term euphoria. And finally, those of you who think eating those burgers are great, and I just saw a new commercial where they're measuring for carnivores how to make the perfect hamburger for one of these fast food commercials. Here's what they don't tell you. And this is what's important. And this is the latest study from the Scientific Advisory Committee on Nutrition of our government. Quote, 5 hamburgers per week increases your risk of cancer, and we're talking about as little as 70 grams. 70 grams is just over a little less than 3 ounces. 3 ounces? Who eats a 3-ounce hamburger? How about no one? You can't get a 3-ounce hamburger. So the amount of meat you're eating as a hamburger is going to increase your risk of cancer substantially. So if you don't want to get cancer, especially colorectal cancer, understand, put down the hamburgers, go vegan. If you increase eating the hamburgers, well, you've just increased your risk of cancer. Back in a moment. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world, and especially all of the audience listening in from this wonderful program that's a worldwide audience, 20,000 listening in Scotland that I was on for 2 hours last night over the internet, a really progressive audience. And I didn't know that he also has our program playing on his network. I was not aware of these connections. And I had never been on the show, never heard of it before, and suddenly a whole new door opened up to this Scottish radio internet station that is worldwide, and the calls coming in from everywhere. So I'm going to be back on there next Monday night for another 2 hours. So I want to welcome all those people from Scotland and around the world who heard last night, who are now new listeners on the Progressive Radio Network. Now to our issue. Once I give the issue, please call in and share your points of view. And this is one of the most popular parts of our program. We're going to take as many calls as possible. When you call in, give your name, the city you're calling from, and your comment, and we'll get you right on the air. These two, one is Professor Paul Craig Roberts, who was the Assistant Secretary of Treasury under the Reagan administration. The other is from John Nichols. And John Nichols is the Washington correspondent for The Nation magazine and associate editor of the Capital Times in Madison, Wisconsin. And he's also co-founder of the media reform organization Free Press. And let me start with Paul Craig Roberts. What does the world think? Obama has been using airstrikes and drones against civilians in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, and probably Somalia. In his March 28th speech, Obama justified his airstrikes against Libya on the grounds that the embattled ruler, Gaddafi, was using airstrikes to put down a rebellion. Gaddafi has been a black hat for as long as I can remember. If we believe the adage that where there's smoke, there's fire, Gaddafi is not a nice guy. However, there's no doubt whatsoever that the current U.S. president and the predecessor Bush-Cheney regime have murdered many times more people in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia than Gaddafi has murdered in Libya. Moreover, Gaddafi's putting down a rebellion against state authority as presently constituted, but Obama and Bush initiated wars of aggression based entirely on lies and deception. Yet Gaddafi's being demonized, and Bush, Cheney, Obama are sitting on their high horse draped in cloaks of morality. Obama described himself as saving Libyans from violence, while Obama himself murders Afghans, Pakistanis, and whomever else. Indeed, the Obama regime has been torturing a U.S. soldier, Bradley Manning, for having a moral conscience. America has denigrated to the point where having a moral conscience is evidence of anti-Americanism and terrorist activity. The Bush-Cheney-Obama wars of naked aggression have bankrupted America. Professor Joseph Stiglitz, former chairman of the President's Council of Economic Advisers, concluded that the money wasted on the Iraq War could have fixed the U.S. American Social Security program for half a century. Instead, the money was used to boost the obscene profits of the armament industry, the obscene wars of aggression, the obscene profits of the offshore corporations, and the obscene bailouts of the rich financial gangsters have left the American public with annual budget deficits of approximately $1.5 trillion. These deficits are being covered by printing money. Sooner or later, the printing presses will cause the U.S. dollar to collapse and domestic inflation will explode. So security benefits will be wiped out by inflation rising more rapidly than the cost of living adjustments. If America survives, no one will be left but the super mega rich, unless there is a violent revolution. Alternatively, if the Federal Reserve puts the brakes on monetary expansion, interest rates will rise, sending the economy into a deeper depression. Washington, focused on its newest war, is oblivious to America's peril. As Stiglitz notes, the cost of the Iraq War alone could have kept every foreclosed family in their home, provided health care for every American child, wiped out the student loans of graduates who cannot find jobs because they have been outsourced to foreigners. However, the great democratic elected government of the world's only superpower prefers to murder Muslims in order to enhance the profits of the military's security complex. More money is spent violating the constitutional rights of American air travelers than is spent on behalf of the needy and the poor. The moral authority of the West is rapidly collapsing. When Russia, Asia, and South America look at Europe, Australia, and Canada, they see America puppet states that contribute troops to the aggressive wars of the empire. The French president, the British prime minister, and the prime minister of Canada and the rest are merely functionaries of the American empire. The puppet rulers routinely sell out the interests and welfare of their people on behalf of American power, and they are well rewarded for their service. 1 year out of office, former British Prime Minister Tony Blair has increased his net worth to $30 million. in 1 year. As an aside, by the way, Bill Clinton is now the richest president in American history. His net profit and net wealth has increased to about $200 million. In his war against Libya, Obama has taken America one step further into Caesarism. Obama did Bush one step better and did not even bother to get congressional authorization for his attack on Libya. Obama claimed that his moral authority trumped the U.S. Constitution. The hypocrisy reeks. How the public stands for it, I do not know. The American president, whose drones and Air Force slaughter civilians every day of the year, went on to say Libya stands alone in presenting the world with, quote, the prospect of violence on a horrific scale. Obviously, Obama thinks that 1 million dead Iraqis, 4 million displaced Iraqis, and an unknown number of murdered Afghans is just a small thing. The rest of Obama's speech showed a person more capable of double-speak and double-think than Big Brother and the denizens of George Orwell, 1984. How does a person as totally absurd as Obama expect to be taken seriously? End quote. From John Nichols of The Nation. President Obama finally got around to speaking to the American people about the fact that he has led the country into a third war. The speech was, to no one's surprise, ably delivered. The president spoke with emotional and rhetorical power of how he felt there had been a need to intervene in order to prevent a massacre that would have reverberated across the region and stained the consciousness of the world. He explained how there are times when our safety is not directly threatened, but our interests and values are. He decried the temptation to turn away from the world and promised that wherever people long to be free, they will find a friend in the United States. Those are noble sentiments, well expressed. Unfortunately, he also spoke about how he had initiated the way on his own. Quote, I ordered warships into the Mediterranean. I refused to let that happen. I authorized militarization at my discretion. The problem is that presidents are not supposed to start wars, especially wars of whim that are offensive rather than defensive in nature. That was the complaint against George Bush when he failed to obtain a declaration of war before ordering the invasion of Iraq. That is the ongoing complaint against Obama for maintaining the undeclared wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And that is the legitimate and necessary complaint against Obama now, a complaint that should come not just from opponents of the military intervention, but supporters who want that intervention to be lawful and legitimate. The president did not address the fact that the Libyan adventure is an undeclared war. In fact, he barely mentioned the Congress that is supposed to declare wars, saying only, and so 9 days ago, after consulting the bipartisan leadership of Congress, I authorized military action to stop the killing and enforce U.S. Security Council Resolution 1973. But the Constitution does not discuss consulting the bipartisan leadership. It says, quote, Congress shall have the power to declare war, grant letters of marque and reprisal, and make rules concerning captures on land and water, unquote. That was the point of Congressman Dennis Kucinich made in regard to the speech, suggesting that President Obama, quote, owes the nation an explanation as to why he had time to consult with 15 members of the UN Security Council, 22 members of the Arab League, and later with 28 members of NATO, to garner support for an attack with Great Britain and France, but had no time to come to the United States Congress for prior authorization before attacking Libya. Kucinich argued, quote, Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution is very clear. It is Congress that determines when our nation goes to war. President Obama superseded that authority and bought a new war for the American people without congressional approval. We must know what it will cost, how long it will last, what is the end game, and when will NATO, whose military bills we pay, get out? Kucinich continued, quote, President Obama's failure to come to Congress, as required by the Constitution, left us without the opportunity to have a full and ample debate on the merits of military intervention in Libya. As such, I intend to offer a bipartisan amendment to cut off funds for the U.S. participation in the war in the next funding measure. I want to thank Representative Ron Paul and Walter Jones, and Tom McClintock, and Peter Stark, and Lynn Woolsey for their co-sponsorship of the amendment. Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin, Democrat of Wisconsin, issued a statement immediately following the president's speech, which began, quote, I oppose the current engagement of the U.S. military forces in Libya. Our nation cannot afford a third war, and Congress has not authorized it. Echoing Kucinich, she said the Constitution gives Congress the authority to declare war. Defense Secretary Gates has publicly stated that Libya is not a vital interest to the United States. Congress must debate and act now on this new military engagement in Libya. Also, Baldwin raised concerns, quote, for a decade, the U.S. has been fighting wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. We have spent over $1 trillion of borrowed money, lost 6,000 American lives, thousands more servicemen and women have suffered serious life-altering injuries. Even as they support these wars with no clearly defined mission or exit strategy, House Republicans are seeking deep cuts in job creation efforts, veteran services, health care, education, and transportation. These are misguided priorities. End quote. Your thoughts, please. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Your turn to talk and on our issues segment of our program. And anyone who is in North America, and that includes Canada, who would like to call in, or in that who has phone connections who can come through, can give us your opinion. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment with your comments. And then radiation, when we're telling you there's no safe level, please keep that in mind when you're hearing everyone else from the New York Times and the EPA saying, don't worry, be happy. Oh, you should be concerned. Gary Nolan, you're listening to the number one listened to progressive radio program in the world. Joining us in our studio in New York City is our overall program director, Jason. Hi, Jason. We're going to be taking your calls. I'm seeing the board light up. We'll get to as many of your calls in a few moments as possible.
Good afternoon, Gary. So this past weekend, Marianne, a social activist for the last 30 years in the Upper West Side here, had you be the keynote speaker for a sweatshop labor group. And she was very happy to have you there, and she also said that you were an important person to have there, and she was upset that no other people like you were there, and she was wondering why people like that weren't putting their powers, too, behind it.
I would look at it differently. First, put it in perspective. There was a rally on the Upper West Side against sweatshop labor, mm-hmm. and I believed as a social activist that we should address those issues that impact other people. In this case, all the people working in restaurants, not exclusively restaurants, but certainly restaurants in this case, where they're not paid overtime, they're not paid tips, they're cheated, and they're paid frequently less than minimum wage. And sometimes they're illegal, so then the person's afraid to go to authorities and they don't really have representation. So I ask people, as well as the other speakers, including Gail Brewer and some members of the city council and a state senator who was there, to speak up and get every single business on the Upper West Side to start, as an example, to sign a statement that they would not engage in sweatshop labor. Also, I believe that we should stop focusing upon minimum wage and look at a living wage. And as I said, I believe that it is the responsibility of anyone who owns a business to realize you're only successful because of the quality of the people that work with you. And if you can understand that it's a cooperative process, then share with those individuals in that process. I also believe that if you're in a business and you own the business and it's not doing well, the owner of the business should take themselves off salary, so not to sacrifice anyone else. And lowering their hourly wage or cutting their hours. If you make that, then think of all the corporations in America by extension that the people running a corporation make poor decisions, adversely affect the outcome, and then they don't take the hit. They allow people who had nothing to do with making the decision that got them into trouble to sacrifice their jobs, when frequently sacrificing their hours or jobs puts them in dire poverty. I just think we need a new morality, a new ethic, and that's why I supported that. Why other people were not there, I don't know. I don't think that's really important. I think you have, in my world, focus upon what is the yes. Are you going to show up? Yes. Are you going to be there to support other people? Yes. What about the people that aren't there? I can't address that. All I can say is, if I have the power to do something to help another human being, that's my responsibility, not to remind other people theirs.
No, thank you. So also, I got some news for all of your fans. Sunday at 9 a.m., the starting up of the new running and walking club over at 90th Street and 5th Avenue, 9 a.m., be right there.
Well, what that is that we haven't done this in a long time. But we have the Natural Living and Running and Walking Club, and it's a free club. We meet on Sundays. This will be our first meeting in a long time, where all of our coaches, and we help people to train to do the New York City Marathon, either power walking it, jogging it, or racing it. And we've helped over 23,000 people do that over the years. And you'll see some really wonderful human beings. And we're there, no matter what your state of health, we're going to make every effort to get you into shape. And we meet weekly on Sundays, and we're a holistic training. So we work with every aspect, diet, body, mind, And we've helped create some of the great athletes. Sid Howard, one of the greatest, one or two greatest senior milers in the world. Sam Skinner, Thelma Wilson, Louise Nottage, Joan Rowland. All these people originated from our group. So we're going to, and you'll see many of them. So we're going to be there. I'll be there, 9 o'clock, 5th Avenue and 90th Street. Come with running shoes. We're just going to get people started slowly, get them information, get them motivated. And each week we add a little on to it. And it's just one of the most joyful things in the world on marathon day to do that marathon with 50, 100, 200 people all together. It's a major accomplishment because to do it, you really have to change a lot of negatives into positives. And that's why we do it. It'll be at 90th Street and 5th Avenue this Sunday, 9 a.m., all right, and we look forward to seeing people there.
Also later that day, we have something going on here at the station, 2307 Broadway. We're going to start a gathering for a green tea populist progressive movement to talk about five issues that can relate to everyone and where we can develop ideas and plans to work on these ideas. So we're looking for some people who want to come over here to the station. You can give me a call, 646-926-5428, and let me know your name, and we'll have you come down at noon on Sunday.
What we intend to do with that is there's over 41% of all registered voters who are now independent. These individuals at one time had been really strong Democrat or Republican advocates, but saw for their own reasons limitations in that system of belief, and now have declared themselves independent. But unfortunately, they're not organized and they're not communicating. The Greens, the Constitutionalists, the Libertarians, taking the most humanistic part of their philosophy, cutting off what is not, and all the others. You have progressive liberals, you have progressive conservatives, but having a forum where they can agree upon certain basic platforms. What should we all agree upon? What could we agree upon? And then do our homework, do our research. And so anyone in the United States who became aware of that issue would suddenly say, well, that makes sense, and then try to find people to run for office who would support those populist progressive issues. So we take that, the non-communicating, the non-cooperating independents, and bring them together on issues they can communicate with, they can agree upon. Look, I don't care if you don't agree upon everything, but agree upon one thing. If you have five people agreeing upon one thing and they all work together, you can make that happen because you then spread it. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to start, we're starting it, and it'll grow. And a year from now, we'll be able to have information, articles, documentaries, platforms that can be used to help move the progressive movement from non-consequence in the political and economic spectrum to something that is irrelevant. Okay. Thank you. And give your number again for those who would like to attend. I'll be here, and it'll start at 1, and it'll go for about an hour and a half.
646-926-5428.
Okay, and we couldn't have done this 3 years ago, but now there's a need for change. Let's say hello from, is it Aide from Brooklyn or Addie?
Aide in Brooklyn.
Hi.
Hi, how are you? I totally disagree with the American involvement in airstrikes against Libya and Libyans and stuff like that. It's one thing one has to understand is Libya is not unique in this system. So Gaddafi is a dictator or a bad person, as we've been led to believe. Maybe he is, maybe he is not. But so as so many other leaders of the world, so many people take their people for granted and ill-treat and kill their people. We're not bombing them. So it seems like there has to be another reason or other reasons and stuff like that. Maybe the oil. He's been compliant in giving everybody that wants to buy oil and all of that. But another thing that I don't like about it is the American gullibility or the ignorance. Tunisia, Egypt, Libya, all of these countries are in Africa. This is not the Middle East. Every of those countries is an African country. And it really does not speak well for a huge power like America to be bombing and taking advantage of people who can hardly defend themselves. I mean, we're not bombing Tunisia or Egypt or anything like that. But in the case of Libya, it's like when this whole thing started, we saw the Egyptians on the street. None of them carried guns. None of them shot at their government forces or anything like that. So the army decided and the police decided to take a peaceful resolution to that and move Mubarak out. But in the case of Libya, the very first footage we saw of any unrest in Libya was of Libyans with guns shooting at the Libyan forces. Okay, if somebody is trying to take over the state, what do they expect the state to do? I don't like violence and I don't want people killed, but it seems like somebody outfitted, somebody provided the rebels, as we've called them, with guns to shoot at their army and their police forces. So I think what we've led ourselves into is a civil war. Some people who wanted to see Gaddafi out within his own country took the opportunity of what's happening in Egypt or Tunisia, and they went on the streets.
Okay, you've made an important point. I think we should not forget the Mujahideen in Afghanistan and what came from that. I also believe that we cannot assume that the CIA and our military intelligence has not been on the ground in supporting what we're calling the rebels. Who are the rebels? How many of those rebels are Al-Qaeda? What will happen in that vacuum? This is not to support Gaddafi's position at all. It's just to show that better be very careful in what you're doing. And if you cannot find the same resolute position to defend the 1 million existing refugees in the Ivory Coast, with over 1,000 who have been killed, more than have been killed in Libya, as if that doesn't exist. And where were the people in this administration, including Clinton and Obama and Gates, when all 22 of the Arab League nations were repressing their democratic movements, jailing their dissidents, killing the individuals who represented a threat to the state, and we continue to do business with them? How does that make us look in the eyes of the world? Also, to Obama stating that, well, we didn't want another Rwanda. I will not take this time today, but I will do a comprehensive, historical, and accurate discussion of Rwanda, and Rwanda and Libya cannot be compared, and it is a disgrace that this president would invoke Rwanda as the reason that he went into Libya. I will give you a history lesson on Rwanda later this week, if time permits, to explain it. Thank you very much, Ed, from Brooklyn. Al from Westbury.
Hi. My comment is regarding Obama's regime in the Middle East. I have recently heard on different media outlets that no other president since George H.W. Bush has made more strides for this New World Order and his global government. My question to you is, now that we're so far ahead in the Middle East, basically dominating other countries, and with our position there, what other events would there need to be in order for this to occur? I'll take my response off air.
Well, for what to occur? I'm sorry. Oh, I didn't understand one part of your question. I'm sorry, I would be happy to address it, but I missed something in what you were asking me. If you call back, I'll get to it. Marlon from New York City, you're on the air.
Hey, Gary, how are you?
Good.
Hey, Gary, my issue is with Obama and the media and the American public in this sense. Number one, you were correct. There are already reports that have shown that these so-called rebels have been CIA-trained and CIA-funded, the MI6, the SAS, they have all been on the ground in Libya. That's the first thing. The second thing is, a lot of these so-called rebels, they're either expatriates that are being funded by us, or as you said, they're Al-Qaeda, who have an Islamic fundamentalist issue with a more secular Gaddafi, as well as their whole tribal thing that they're going on, and the media is not reporting this. Secondly, Obama is a bold-faced liar, because even Gates and Admiral Mullen of the Joint Chief of Staff had admitted they have no video or confirmation, which means it's a lie, that Gaddafi has strafed any civilians and Russian intelligence and satellite photos, because, you know, they're missing their piece of this action, that they had contracts signed with Libya. They confirmed this. So this whole thing is a make-believe war. Do you know that these so-called rebels, Gary, actually have coffee stands and free internet access for American reporters to report these stories? This whole thing is a proxy war charade like we've done all over the world. And I think Obama is worse than George Bush because, number one, people think he has a good heart. Two, he's black, so he's allowed to go into Africa and the Middle East with impunity, or at least he thinks so. And people want to believe in the so-called liberal elite and the liberal press. They're buying this thing hook, line, and sinker and defending him. And by the time a year or 2 years from now, when the real truth comes out that we're talking about here, it would have already been too late. And who knows what's going to happen, but I just think Obama's a liar, the press is compliant, and even we in the liberal community are not standing up against this war because we want to believe that Obama's a good man. Just wanted to hear your comments.
Okay, well, first, look at the most populous nation in Africa as far as the one single country. You're looking at Nigeria, one of the largest oil producers, but Libya dominates that as far as oil. Would we be in any other nation, any one of the other nations that are in social conflict, protecting and strafing their regimes like Saudi Arabia, if there was not oil? Then what good would we be if we did not completely have a regime change? Do you not think that the CIA has not been working behind the scenes with State Department black op people saying to the generals or the people in Libya around Gaddafi, assassinate Gaddafi, get him out, get him on a plane, get him someplace else, and then you will be allowed to be a part of an interim government, but we will then control the oil. Is that possible? Is that part of the scenario? The trouble is, historically, we have never been told the truth about our interventions, and look at the lies and deceptions that we would later talk about, and only belatedly would the media ever admit that where they supported going into the war, like Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity and Geraldo, where were they when they found they were wrong? Did they ask us to extract ourselves because we were doing nothing good? And what about the depleted uranium that is impacting every Iraq, every Libyan? Those on the side of the rebels, those on the side of Gaddafi, it doesn't matter. They're all now going to be permanently contaminated with very, very deadly depleted uranium. No responsibility for that. Thank you for your call, Marlon. Is it Virginia? From Virginia?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. Yes, I have an idea. All the homeless vets that are in Florida and various other places, I think you should bring them up here to Washington and put them up in Lafayette Square, across from the White House, or Lafayette Park. And you're just going to need to get in their face and and let everybody, let the country see all the collateral damage that we have from all these wars.
Let me just share two thoughts. First, our guest, we're not able to reach, but we'll get our guest on tomorrow. That's why we've been delaying a little here. But he'll be on. Hopefully, we'll have no problem getting him on tomorrow. Three things. A, did you see the interviews I did when I went into the woods of Central Florida to film where 16,000 homeless vets are there struggling with no electricity, no water, no food, no benefits, no help?
Yes.
All right. You saw that I went into the middle of the woods, interrupted them in their sleep. At 10 o'clock in the morning, these people are suffering. Did you hear the one named Red, the woman who said that, I said, where's Sean Hannity? He asked you to, you know, us to support you when you went into the war. Has Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, Bill O'Reilly, Geraldo, Laura Ingraham, have any of these people come down here to help you? And they said, no. So on the one hand, we can see the patent hypocrisy of getting people into a conflict, but never being there when they're adversely affected by the conflict we support. Secondly, we have made some differences. Hundreds of thousands of dollars have now, because of the exposure of those YouTube videos, have gone in there. My goal is to find a piece of property and to build an entire village just for homeless vets down in Texas. I'm looking now where you would have mental health, holistic mental health, not psychiatric drugs, but holistic mental health counselor, holistic psychologist to help them, detoxify from the effects of depleted uranium vaccines, and then help them reassemble their lives where they can reenter society so that they're not abusing themselves or others. I shouldn't do that. The government should do that. The government won't lift a finger to help its vets, especially if they're suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder or Gulf War syndrome, which we still deny. We can't get them to Washington because we can't even get them to go to a local center where they get a meal once a day if they walk there for 4 miles to walk there and 4 miles back. If you're a homeless vet, you're living in the woods, you have no money, and you have to walk 4 miles to get one meal a day and hopefully a shower from a center, and I filmed the guy at that center, then you realize what kind of challenge you would have getting him to Washington. That won't happen immediately, but bringing their plight to the American public's attention, I believe the American public, when shown the truth, will respond to the truth if you get that message out, and that's what we need to do. Thank you very much, Virginia. Let's say hello to Rich from Central Falls. Hi, Rich, you're on the air. Rich?
Hello, this is Rich Carlson from Wappinger Falls, excuse me.
Okay.
What upsets me is that so many people give Obama the benefit of the doubt when he says he's conducting a humanitarian operation in Libya. You know, he has a history of not going after Bush and Cheney for all their crimes. They should have been impeached. He has continued the war in Iraq, in Afghanistan, extended it into Pakistan, and still they want to give him the benefit of the doubt that he represents big money, just like the Republican Party, the Democratic Party. Their interest is pleasing big money, military, and, it's just astonishing that people are ready to give him the benefit of doubt all the time.
Well, what we have to do is, at a certain point, you say, what is the magic number to how many times you'll fool me? Then it's not about Obama or the people around him or Larry Summers or any of the others. It's about we being allowing ourselves to be that vulnerable. Thank you, Rich. Lincoln from, Mount Vernon?
Yeah. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Lincoln.
Your old friend Lincoln. Hi there. I think one of the things that people are missing is the CIA's involvement in Libya. And if you look at it, it's the same thing they did to Mossadegh in Iran when they went into the country and they actually stirred up the people against the government of Mossadegh. And what happened is the people start believing that it was they themselves who were initiating this, because the CIA is good at deceptive engagements. They did the same thing to Panama. They used Noriega, and then when he wasn't doing their bidding, and they invaded Panama under the guise that they were, Noriega was a drug smuggler. They killed Omar Touré because he wouldn't do their biddings. And Obama is a perfect person for the blind. A lot of people missed so much about him when he was in the debates. When they asked him about Cuba, he said that he would allow people to visit Cuba, but he would not lift the embargo. He would use it as a bargaining tool. And any enlightened person and any person putting Cuba in a historical context would know that that was completely erroneous. And people fail to realize that Obama, all these things about change and hope, those are vacuous statements. Those are statements lacking anything concrete. And it's easy for anyone to say change, change, hope, hope. But what is the nuts and bolts? What are the concrete things that we're talking about?
I'm asking you to just let me finish the program because we're out of time. My final thought, please don't confuse Gaddafi with Mossadegh. Mossadegh was a very ethical person on all levels, and it was because of him wanting a higher percentage of the revenue from British Petroleum coming to the Iranian government and the people that then British Petroleum's president went to Eisenhower, and Eisenhower then got the CIA to foment the coup that got rid of him so that they wouldn't then have anything nationalized or a higher percentage of profits going to them. Gaddafi is clearly not a good guy. He has terrorized his own people. He has been repressive, but he was our attack dog. Just as you said, Noriega was a drug dealer, and he was a bad guy, but he was our bad guy, and Saddam Hussein was our bad guy. The fact that we have supported dictators, despotic individuals, murderers, and torturers, repressors of freedom movements in their own country, and then when they no longer are on the leash, then we go after them. I think that we should have an honest appraisal of our complicity in repressing freedom movements in these countries that we're now all concerned about. Yes, we should be concerned. Let's keep it in proper historical perspective. Thank you very much, Lincoln. Thank all of you today for sharing your points of view. I'm sorry, all of our phones, we must have had 100 calls coming in. I'll spend more time on upcoming programs dealing with issues. I'm Gary Noll. Have a wonderful day, everyone.
The Gary Noll Show is produced in our New York City studio. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. The chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Jason Taubenfeld.